Good morning. How are you? It's good to see you. Last week, I left you with a couple of challenges, a couple of statements that I left you with that intimated, first of all, that we are spiritually, as parents, using birth control or, at worst, impotent in our disciple-making process. And that's pretty harsh. And so I said there's two reasons for us having that kind of perspective and that kind of effect in our church. Number one, we don't care about lost people. That's one possible reason. And number two, we don't know how to engage with lost people. And that is the one I'm more comfortable with. And I said last week, I want to take you off the hook and just say, I know you care for them, but you just don't know how. But remember, we came full circle to saying, when we really want to do something, we figure out how. So if you don't know how, and you haven't learned how for a long time, then it comes back full circle to, well, maybe I just really don't care. And I'm going to stay there because I think that for us is the important place to stay. It's the important place for us to move from. And even if we do care, we could care more. And so I'm going to let that hang because I think it's a better motivation. And that really is the motivation that's going to take us to the house. So I asked you to do two things. The first one was to earnestly pray. To begin to earnestly pray and to actually insert that into your schedule. And I'm hoping that that's actually been a reality for you, that between last Sunday and this Sunday, there has been at least 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 or 10 times of intentional prayer. That you've actually said, you know, I'm not going to pray in the car as I'm driving, rushing to work. I'm not going to pray in the shower like I normally do. Continue to do those things. I'm not saying don't, but I'm actually going to take a moment of time, a period of time, a section of time, a slice of time, I'm going to put in my calendar that I'm going to pray. And in that period of time that I pray, I'm not going to pray for Aunt Alice. I'm not going to pray for my dad who really needs prayer. I'm not going to pray for even me. I'm going to start asking God to do a couple things. And I'm going to ask God, first of all, to share his heart with me for lost people. But I want to get back to that place where I really care about lost people. They break my heart. Where I can sing that song, Tear Down Those Walls, or read the words, because it is a difficult song to sing, and just have those words really impact me and say, that's really true. That's why we're here. When I can sing the song, Your Great Name, and that's a marvelous song, it should bring tears to your eyes. You know, that there's a sense in which God has taken us and taken bruised and broken people, bruised and broken because of the fall, because of sin, and bruised and broken in many ways. And they're out there and they're in need of the great name of Jesus to come and give them hope and to cover their sin and to cover their death. So those were the challenges that we had last week, to earnestly pray, to seize the heart of God, and to seize the mission of Christ. Because we want to become a disciple-making movement. Which means this, we want to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. That becomes truly our legacy. A couple years ago, we started a building project and bought some land. We called it Building a Lasting Legacy because that property is going to last for generations and many people will come to Christ as a result of whatever happens on that piece of property, probably when we're dead. But alongside of that, in order for that to be fulfilled, the central mission of God needs to be implemented. And that's that we make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. Churches that are vital and churches that are grow have this as the core of their life. People come to Christ in those kinds of churches. And we're in danger of becoming the kind of church, just in general, that just swaps Christians from one place to another based on fad, based on, you know, that's really happening over there, whatever it might be. And we want to be a place that actually engages with a community and brings lost people into the kingdom so that growth is not transfer growth or people coming here because they're interested in this building or this place. but they're interested in Jesus. And so that becomes our goal. So we're going to continue to do that. What the plan is for this year is to have a series of disciple-making and discipleship sermons. And so we're going to begin today with a discipleship process, one that I'm calling Join Me. Join Me. So that's a little placard over my Bible, and I made these little placards, and these sheets are available for you as you go. They're called Join Me. So I thought, you know, here's what we do, and it's a good thing that we do, but it needs to be supplemented by this previous or this first thing that we should be doing. We do what I call discipleship. And discipleship is what the church does to encourage and to exhort, to train, and to teach Christians. So our church is filled with Christians, and most of our ministries are directed at Christians. And that's discipleship. We want to become better disciples of Jesus Christ, right? There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is if we only have a definition of discipleship, what happens is that we view this as the mothership, and all that discipleship happens inside the ship. It's like we're on a cruise together. And so we go off into the ocean, we isolate ourselves from the world, we surround ourselves with people that we like, we worship Jesus, and we learn about Jesus, and it's fantastic. But that's a constricted and restricted space, and it's only one part of the mission. It's the end part of the mission. And if every single one of us thought about this, at some point in our lives, somebody, some individual began the process of making us into disciples. Right? It was an invitation. It was a word. It was a challenge. You probably could come up with that person and say, that was the guy. For me, it's George Titoff. That was the guy. He's the guy who you know, I was in the church, I knew that stuff, but he was the guy who was that instrument of God that was used by God to ask me a simple question, pricked my conscience, and started me on my walk with Christ, on my disciple-making movement walk with Christ. And so that's really the issue that we need to address, is that what is happening in our church, what process or what pathway do we have for people who are not yet disciples to make it into the ship? And that's called disciple making. So when you start thinking about these words, you want to start making this strong distinction between discipleship and disciple making. And we do discipleship pretty well. We don't do disciple making very well at all. And what I mean by that is that this church doesn't have a process that says, here's how we do it. So, I've started a couple things to try and help us do that, and to try and help me do it, for crying out loud. I've been in the ship a long time, and so I've got to get out of the ship. So I've got a series of four questions today to ask you as we start engaging in this process. And really, these four questions all circulate around those two ideas from last week. Number one, earnestly pray. And number two, you want to seize the heart of God. You want to seize the heart of God. You want to seize the mission of Christ. You want to have compassion for lost people again and have that drive you. And that needs to be the focal point of our prayer, because that's really partly what's missing from our prayers, is earnest prayer for people. A couple years ago, a guy named Engel wrote a book and came up with what's called the Engel Scale. And the Engel Scale is just a scale of stages between totally antagonistic towards God, let's say that's at the bottom, all the way up to conversion, all the way up to heaven or eternity. So what are the stages that any one person would go through to move from total antagonism towards God to a little more receptive, maybe somebody says, that's an interesting thing. I never knew that about Jesus, or that person is different from the people I thought followed Jesus or were Christians, and just move them up the scale of receptivity to the gospel, and then the process we move towards maturity in Christ. And it's a fascinating scale because when we start thinking about disciple making, as you approach people, as you engage with people, you want to start asking, where is this person on their spiritual journey? At what point along this scale are these people? And what do they need next? Because most of us, when we think about disciple making or slash evangelism, we think about whoever it is that we encounter. At that encounter, I want to do the exact same thing every time. And that's share the four spiritual laws or the plan of salvation or the Romans road or whatever it is. No matter when I encounter them, that's what I want to do. When in fact, people are at different stages along this continuum of progress towards receptivity towards the gospel. And if we're going to be wise about this and smart as we engage with people around us, you want to start discerning where people are. Where are they on this track? On this trek, and what message do they need to hear at this point? And that's a very important thing. So what I want to start with as we talk about this join me thing, well, let me just first of all share with you what I did with this, and it's just a simple thing. Actually, let me talk about that in a minute. You poor first service people. you get Steve up here going, no, I'm going to do that a little later. Working out my sermon still. So let's go to the next slide. I want to talk to you about four areas of influence, or answering this question, who should I tell? If you're going to be a disciple maker, at some point you need to tell people about the gospel. Okay? You need to talk to people about their spiritual journey. So who is it that I should tell? And there are four spheres and then one additional one that I'm going to add. Every single buddy in this room knows at four categories of people, right? Family, friends, neighbors, and then I've got up there the marketplace, whatever that is for you. It could be your place of employment. It could be the place you go and have hobby, school, any place that you actually engage in the marketplace, in the world. So those are the four categories or spheres of influence or relationship that you have. And in every one of those categories, you know believers and unbelievers. These are contact points that you have initially. So you ask the question, who? God said, make disciples. And I'm going to say, of whom should I make a disciple? Who should I talk to? Who should I pray for? Who should I have compassion for? Who should I analyze according to this angle scale to say, where are they on their spiritual journey? Who is that? So those four categories, and each and every one of you know believers and unbelievers in those categories. Now, some of these categories you may have known people for a long, 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 long time, and so it's kind of uncomfortable. I've been a Christian. I really never talked to you about Christ or faith in Christ, but I'd like to do that. Get over yourself and get over that barrier. It's not as big as you think it is. But in all those areas where I want you to start is start listing people in those categories that you know that are not believers, that aren't disciples. And the call is, I want to make disciples of these people. I want to bring them to a place of following after me. Now, this is a pretty ambitious effort on our part, right? The way Jesus did it is he walked up to people and he said, follow me. So if we're going to take the scriptures and I'm going to preach a sermon about, well, here's how Jesus did it, here's what you should do. Go up to people and say, follow me. Now, I, for one, am not willing to do that. It's a little pretentious. So I swapped out that phrase with the phrase, will you join me? I'm following Jesus. Will you join me in my following after Jesus? Now, that's kind of a generic phrase. You can modify that however you want. But I think that's a great invitation for people. So in this third or this fifth category, intentional reach beyond family, friends, neighbors, marketplace, there's also a sense in which as the church, as the receivers of the gospel in this community, we're supposed to move beyond just the people that we know or in our circles and actually engage people who are outside of those circles, unknowns to us, people that we don't know, right? And we're supposed to do that. And part of what the process would be is just ask God, show me who you want me to talk to today. But we need to have something to talk to them about. We need to have some method by which we engage people. So this is what I've done just to start this in my life, because my marketplace, my friends, my family, not my neighbors so much, but I only have three or four. My area of influence is dominated by Christian people, just because of the profession I've chosen. I mean, I could actually evangelize Joanne, but I think she's already got it. Right? So I've been trying to think of, okay, I need to add an area where I intentionally move beyond and out. So what I did was, if you go back to the last slide, Jim, I made these little placards called Join Me. And so now I've decided that I'm going to do this at least once a week. Every time I go to Starbucks, sometimes I'll go down there and I'll study and I'll sit. But I'm going to go down there an additional time, just take my Bible, not my computer, not my laptop. I'm just going to pull my Bible out, stick it on a table. I'm going to put this placard on the edge of my table that says, Join Me. Because really the door-to-door thing doesn't work for us in this community for a couple of reasons, and we'll talk about that at length if you want to. There's got to be a way for us to do the door-to-door thing or to reach the people that we don't know who are beyond our four spheres of influence. So this is just one way that I'm going to do this. So Thursday, I was at Starbucks over on Ramona Expressway, and I pulled my Bible out, and I stuck the little placard out there, and I read for about an hour and a half. And just to share, it's an easy thing I'm going to do. I'm going to do it for an extended period of time to see how it works. And I had one person come up to me, and he goes, I like your little sign. I said, great. And so I engaged him. I said, this is what I'm doing. And I handed him one of these little sheets that says, Join Me. And on this sheet, it has 10 stories and 4 questions. And the 10 stories are 10 Bible stories that are provocative. Stories that engage people with things that they need to be engaged about. And for us, the first one is the story of the paralytic that's let down through the roof. And the two issues in that story that really are great discussion pieces with unbelievers are forgiveness of sins and the glory of God. So I just say, you know, if you'd like, sit down. I'm just trying to follow Jesus a little more closely. I'm reading Mark chapter 2, and if you want to join me, I'm happy to have you join me. And that's what I'm doing. And I take, we got boxes of these, and you can grab boxes of these. In fact, I'm going to have somebody grab a box before the service is over and have them available for you. We have boxes of these New Testaments. So I had a New Testament and this little thing with me, and I just had it on the table there. Now, this particular guy's name was Eric. He said, oh, I already know how to follow Jesus. I said, that's great. And so here's my second tack with them. That's great. You know, Jesus said that as a follower, you're supposed to make disciples. So why don't you take this and find someone to walk through this with? Because that's what you need to be doing, is making disciples. So here's a simple thing. You might have someone on your heart, someone on your mind, say, you know what? This person might be willing to sit down and read the Bible with me. And all I'm asking you to do is not be the expert to be able to answer all the questions, but just to read 10 stories and ask 4 questions. The 4 questions are, what does this passage teach me about God? What does this passage teach me about people? What does this passage tell me to do? And with whom am I going to share what I'm learning? That's all it does. Simple thing, simple process. And you just say, hey, this is what I'm doing. Now, here's what I would encourage you to do. Start on your own. Just do this on your own. Start reading these passages on your own and answering these 4 questions. And then as you pray, ask God to have someone join you. And then when they start joining you, start back at the top and just work your way through. It could be one-on-one. It could be one-on-two. Don't make it this huge deal. Just say, this is all I want to do is find out how to follow Jesus more. Will you join me? So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to encourage you to do that if you like. We've got tons of Bibles. You can take them. You can do it like I am. You can go to Starbucks. You can just start with people that you know and invite them on that journey with you. So that's the first thing. Who should I talk to? You should talk to people in those spheres of influence. And when you get bolder, you can move beyond that into the outer sphere of people that you don't know. So when I talk to people and I want to engage them, I think this is part of the how-to thing that's difficult, is what do I want to say to people? How do I want to engage them? Most of the time when we think about discipleship or evangelism and disciple making, we think about telling people. We think about telling them something. And I find that's a much more effective tactic, especially one-on-one around a table with family, friends, and neighbors or whatever, is to ask them a question. Now, here's the deal. Let's just say you had a Super Bowl party last week, and you invited some friends over, some people who didn't know Christ, and they were in your home. You don't have any trouble talking to them about the Super Bowl. You don't have any trouble talking to them about the commercials. You don't have any trouble talking to them about all kinds of stuff. I know Jesus is important to you, but somehow we have difficulty transitioning from Super Bowl to Jesus. Right? And I think sometimes we just make it too hard. So let me just throw up some questions for you that might be easier for you to engage in a conversation with people and actually to give them a forum to talk about what they think. It's an amazing thing. When you let people talk and you listen, you automatically gain permission to speak. But if you just rush in and start telling, your message then becomes really almost ignored in our culture. It's like, it's not how we do it. Don't tell me what to do is the predominant mindset of most Americans. So when you walk up to someone and start telling them what to do, what is their immediate response? Defensiveness and get out of my face. I really don't want to hear that. It also communicates a lack of concern about people. But when you ask questions and listen without concern about getting your message across, doesn't that come across way better? Think about just in your best relationship, your marriage relationship. If your spouse starts talking and you keep interrupting them, does that go well for you? Does it go well for you to get up in the morning and tell your spouse what to do? You need to get up right now, and I think you ought to wear these clothes. And by the way, I need my shirt ironed. Doesn't go well for us when we start telling and instructing our spouse. But if our spouse starts talking and we listen, and then we actually ask questions to get them to talk more, have you ever done that? To just ask a leading question so that their story can continue? This will change your marriage, by the way. This isn't a marriage sermon, but if you're not doing that, that'll change your marriage right there. But when you talk to people, just strangers or friends or family members, if you just give them opportunity to speak and listen, you open the door to be able to speak. That's how you get permission to speak into people's lives. So here's some great questions. What was your faith like as a child? When you were growing up, what was faith like for you? And then just listen. You don't think about, okay, how am I going to get the gospel in here? Just listen. Just listen and start asking some questions of them. Engage them and get them to speak about that. What was faith like for you growing up? What part has faith played in your life? Same question asked just a bunch of different ways. How does that work for you today? Does faith play a part in your life? How does it play a part in your life? How does it work for you? And so you get people to talk about these things and you start developing an open context. So listen, Ron and I talk about football during football season every Tuesday morning when I first see him. Hey, Ron, did you watch those games on Sunday? What'd you think? And we have a little conversation. We've set a stage on a weekly basis for a conversation. And it just happens now. It's kind of the regular thing. And if you set a stage or open a door for this kind of conversation, I guarantee you, you've now opened a room in your life with this person that you can go into together and have conversation about. That once you broach the subject, listen to people about this, there's opportunity in the future to continue that conversation. You know, I was thinking about what you said the other day about how when you were a kid, you guys went to church all the time, but it really didn't mean anything to you, and you just felt like you got beat up all the time. I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about how, man, I'm sorry that was the way it was for you. It wasn't that way for me. Why don't you give it another shot? Do you think it might have just been limited to that one place? You can ask so many follow-up questions based on what a person said, because I'm interested in you. I'm interested in who you are, and I want to draw you out. In America, I think that's a very important thing. Another question you could ask is, do you believe everyone's on a spiritual journey? Do you think everyone's on a spiritual journey? And a lot of people will say yes to that question. Or you can ask even more directly, where do you find yourself on a spiritual journey? Are you on a spiritual journey? And where do you find yourself on that journey? Some other questions we could ask people are, have you ever read the Bible? Now it's a little more direct. We're getting a little more specific. Have you ever read the Bible? What do you think about the Bible? Do you have any questions that you think the Bible could answer? Are there questions that you're asking that you think in this area, in this realm? You can modify these questions. Do you have any questions about spiritual things? Do you have any questions about the afterlife? What do you think happens to people when they die? These are all questions you could ask. Would you like to join me in exploring further? Now here's a good one too. If you've got people who have contacts, who have lots of friends who aren't believers, you can say, hey, I'd love to sit down with you. Do you have any friends who might want to join us in this study? Will you join me? These are all questions you could ask and more. And we'll continue to fill in this question list as we go. This is part of the how-tos, right? This is part of the how-tos. How do I transition from one kind of discussion to another? Because here's what I'm going to challenge you to do. In those circles of people that you know, I want you to begin praying for them. Not just praying that God would bring them to himself, but that you would start praying, God, how are you going to use me to reach them? That really becomes the kicker. So you want to be prepared about how you're going to make these transitions. So that's the second question. What should I ask? Who should I tell? What should I ask? The third question is, why should I care? Why should I care about lost people? It's funny, huh? I could just stop right there, and we could have a discussion about that, and you could come up with reasons why we should care about lost people. It's almost like the question's enough. Really, I have to ask that question? And then come up with answers? I have to give you a list of answers to this question? That's kind of the challenge I had this week, and I said, yeah, because I need them. Here's the first thing I think that's important. Is we need to care for lost people because we need to remember where we came from. That none of us were born believers. That each and every one of us was lost. There are different levels of lostness. As a kid, I used to be really jealous of the guys who would get up and have these dramatic conversion stories. I was drinking all the time and into drugs and I was just doing everything you can imagine. And then God took me and I went, I don't have a story like that. It's like, I grew up a little bit. I said, really? My parents made a disciple out of me, right? But, and that's a great thing, and you should make disciples of your kids. That's where mission starts at home, where disciple making starts at home. But the fact of the matter is that all of us were lost. I might not have been that guy who was killing people and in jail and doing drugs and alcohol. But the fact of the matter is I wasn't born a believer. I was lost. And I have lostness in me. And without Christ, I am lost. So we need to remember where we came from. We need to remember our roots. We need to remember that grace was the important part of conversion in our lives, that God loved us in spite of ourselves. And that without a disciple maker, I would not be a disciple. How shall they hear without a proclaimer, without a preacher, without a messenger, is what Romans says. How? How is that going to happen? The implication is that we need to make disciples. So you need to remember where we came from. And so part of worship is that sense of remembrance of what God has done for me. And when we worship, we remember our salvation and we are grateful for it. Along the way, one of the things that helps us in this worship process to remember where we came from is to celebrate the conversion of others. And again, this is a danger if we don't become a disciple-making movement, is that we don't see this fresh influx of new believers. And so our worship remains worship over our own personal conversion. And for me, that was over 40 years ago. And so what happens, the danger of what happens is we start to to turn worship over back on itself, and it becomes about us and not about God, and we lose the serving aspect or the other aspect. We don't see how, oh my Lord, this is the most important thing. And so we talk about the spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians and serving and being other-oriented that extends beyond the walls of the church. Extends to lost people who are lost like us, to people who are not yet believers. And so we begin to treat them as part of the church even before they become part of the church. So we begin to make disciples even before people are converted. And that becomes an important mindset. A grateful heart, a gracious heart, one that looks at other people with grace, and then a generous heart. So if we're going to become people who have the heart of God, we're going to be grateful first and foremost for what he's done, and then we're going to emulate him. We're going to be gracious and generous. Generosity in this category has to do mostly with your time. Why don't you talk to people? Why don't you engage people in conversations? Why don't you engage people in disciple-making kinds of conversations? Why don't you open the door for conversations just even with people that you meet at the supermarket? Why? Because I'm busy. I got places to go. I don't have time for you right now. I just don't. And so there's a part of our life where we need to begin to build in margins in our lives for these kinds of encounters and these kinds of engagements and these kinds of people. We need to begin to be generous with our time, because if you're going to be a disciple maker, it's going to interrupt your life. You're going to have to be generous. You have to say, you know what? I wanted to go do that, but I'm not. I was at a restaurant this week, and I walked in, and I wanted to be alone because I'm a loner, right? And someone walked in that I knew, and I did this. I didn't see him, buried my head in my book. You kind of put the book around your head like this, and then you can't see the peripheral, right? Have you done that before? Like, I don't want to talk to you right now. Don't come over here. This is my time. I'm alone. I want to be alone. And I had to say, you know what, Steve, you just get over yourself. You need to be generous with your time right now. I begin to start looking also at these kinds of encounters with people that I know, people that I don't know, as divinely designed and manipulated. Why is this guy right here right now? Is just chance? Do I really believe that God is in control of everything? Even the people he kind of brings by me? So I have to start thinking that way. But if I'm self-absorbed, and I don't take those moments and those opportunities to say, wow, that guy paused as he walked by the table here and looked at my little placard. What can I say to kind of bring them back to this table? So we have to be generous with our time. That is the heart of God. So the bottom line as to why you should care is because one of the primary ways that God revealed himself to us was in a caring moment. Right? He sent Jesus to meet our needs. It reflects the heart of God. That's why you should care. So the last question we need to ask is, how should we pray? How should I pray for people, or what should I pray? First thing I want you to pray is this: change my heart. Change my heart to match yours. That needs to be the focus of your prayer. Lord, change my heart to match yours, specifically with regard to ugly people. Help me have your heart with regard to ugly people. You know, the Bible uses that phrase. It's a synonym of that phrase, or three of them in the book of Romans, that Christ died for the ungodly while we were yet enemies, while we were yet ungodly, right? We were not his friends. We were ugly. That's when Christ came. So we need to have this heart. give me a heart for ugly people. Use that in a broad sense. People that I don't want to talk to. People that are invading my space. People that I don't really enjoy their values. Give me a heart for those people. Teach me the mission of Jesus. Then some very specific questions. Who should I talk to today? And I'm going to keep it spiritual, mystical. And I want you to listen for God's voice. Who should I talk to today, God? Ask that question seriously and hear his voice when he says to you, this is who you need to talk to. And then, are you willing to obey? So the question we also need to pray is, how can I obey you today, God? How can I obey you today? There is a Japanese art of taking broken vessels and repairing them. It's called Kintsukuroi. I think that's how you say it. I didn't practice. I should have practiced. Kintsukuroi. Kintsukuroi. And what they do is they'll take a broken vessel. There's a story that goes back to the Shogun times of a Shogun sending his servant this broken vessel and saying, I need this fixed. And what the servant did was he mixed together some gold with some sort of agent that would, some sort of glue, and he began to repair this bowl with the gold, and it actually has become an art. That these restorations now actually become better than the originals, so to speak. They're put together with this gold glue. And that really is the disciple-making mission. Is we're looking for broken vessels. We're looking for broken people. And it's like God is the Shogun. And he's saying, here, take this bowl of mine. It's broken. And I want you to fix it. And then bring it back to me so I can use it. And that really is the disciple-making mission. We're actually taking broken vessels and we're sealing them with something that adds beauty and value to their lives. And we're returning them to the Master so that all creation, as we sang, could return to you. And that's what we do as disciple makers, as we take God's broken creation, things that are broken in God's world, and restore them and give them back to him. Will you join me? Because this is what I want to do. This is what I think we need to want to do. Because it's the heart of God. It's the mission of God. And we partake of communion and proclaim his death until he comes. It's about making disciples. Father in heaven, thanks for this morning. I pray that we would join together as your people in following after you and pursuing broken vessels, Lord. Help us to pray. Help us, Lord, to be people who grab a hold of your mission. Help us to grab a hold, Lord, of your heart. And then help us to grab a hold of your lost people. Call us together to be a part of that and to engage in rescuing them, in repairing them, in taking those cracks and filling them with gold and actually presenting to you something that is actually beautiful in its repair. Lord, this is the heart we want. And so I pray that for us this week, we would carve out some time and get on our knees and beseech you, the Lord of the harvest, to send out workers into his harvest, starting with us, and then help us, Lord, to look outward and see those who are even yet unbelievers and pray for them so that they too would join us in this mission of following after you. So we pray this in your Son's name. Amen.